Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood.
Hello, everyone. Happy Monday. Happy Monday, March 23rd. It's a beautiful Monday here in Texas. Well, sort of beautiful. Kind of gray out. But we're doing our COVID-19 blocking and tackling and social distancing and all that. Sort of here in the studio, or studio here in Southlake today. Hopefully everyone out there is staying safe. There's been a lot of reports, and certainly here in the little city that we live in, Southlake, and the greater Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, already of some deaths. So I know it's a serious matter. I actually, and then I'd love to hear your perspective on things too, Bruce, but I actually had a conversation yesterday with a friend of mine who works in the medical space, not as a nurse or practitioner himself. He actually sells into the space. So he maintains regular relationships with nurses and doctors and all that are buying like scrubs and those sorts of things. And he said, in his estimation, because I asked him, I said, well, what are we looking at here, right? Like, is this really as bad as people made out to be? And he said, listen, Justin, it is. And it's probably even worse than people think, because it's because of the widespread nature of this, because it is sort of flu-like, it has the capacity to spread like a wildfire, literally, overnight. And so if you aren't practicing your social distancing, you're basically an idiot. Do so regularly. Obviously, if you can or have the resources to get checked out, get checked out. But this is a very serious global pandemic. I mean, like everything they thought it was. And I feel like, and maybe I'm off base here, but I feel like this is sort of, there might be some spiritual forces, God or whoever, people call to. It's like a resetting of sorts where I feel like, there's some tall tale signs of, hey, the way you've treated the environment and this and that over the last couple decades has been shitty. And like everyone's predicting, there'll be a market adjustment. Well, there kind of already has, at least in the stock market anyway, and perhaps with real estate. I think this is God's adjustment of our world right now. That's just my personal perspective, though, Bruce. I could be wrong here. But
well, we're about 6 feet apart. We have our Clorox wipes and Jose, our guest, Mr. Santana, he's off station there. And, of course, our staff, our LA Talk Radio, are operating from their respective remote places. So, for the most part, we are practicing some good social distancing. So, Justin, like you said, I mean, this is a pandemic, and it is very scary. And so we have people in this country that are incarcerated in large numbers. I'm thinking about like Fort Dix and other prisons where there's thousands of people on top of each other. I know with the restricted prison visitation, but you still have staff and vendors, coming through the rear gate back and forth, as well as, and of course, staff. And so let's bring on our guest, which is Jose Santana, Chief Consultant for Federal Prison Authority. Jose, welcome back.
Thank you. Good. Thank you for having me, and appreciate the opportunity to share some of the things that we're doing with Federal Prison Authority. And this issue with the COVID-19 is something like Justin and you were saying, Bruce. This is something like never seen before. I lived and we all lived the H1N1 crisis. Actually, I was the acting warden in MDC Guaynabo when that happened in 2008, 2009. But this is even worse. Actually, in prison, we had to contain those guys and gals there because we had male and female inmates. And every time a case popped up, we had to quarantine all over again. We quarantined like 3 or 4 times. The courts were kind of annoyed at us because we weren't letting the inmates go. And actually afterwards, they realized that it thanked us for not letting them contaminate anybody and kind of isolate and shelter in place and in the prison. So it's some very, very serious stuff, Justin was saying.
Yes, indeed, it is. And, you know, I couldn't think of a better person to have as a consultant, a person who, you know, was a high-level correction administrator who did make those decisions and understands those protocols on also the management of these types of cases, but also now that we're both out and in the free world as consultants, we also can assist attorneys, assist family members with the knowledge of the policies and the rubrics and the ways that the Bureau of Prisons thinks about these types of issues. Now, here recently, President Trump has expressed an interest in the possibility of considering the release of elderly or elderly nonviolent inmates. So, okay, and yes, we have a caller on the line coming up here. So President Trump has been considering that, and I think it's important for us to maybe talk about that a little bit, Jose, about who's going to go. Who would be under consideration and those things. I know that already, as a result of the First Step Act, that there are some mechanisms that address the elderly. One of them, I think there's three. There's the reduction in sentence for the elderly. There's experimental expanded home confinement for the elderly. And then for some elderly, there are compassionate release procedures. Right. So we have a caller with us. Hello.
Yeah, my name is Bonnie Weister. How are you?
Good, good. You have Bruce and Jose and Justin. How can we help you? What's your question?
Yeah, I've been following you for a couple of weeks. It's starting. I'm the BOP. My son was sentenced in the U.S. Federal District in Texas on March 4th. But he lives in Georgia. So my question is, he self-surrender, but he hasn't received notice. What is going to happen with the coronavirus? Because we had everything in place. I mean, he's got 2 little babies, a wife, and I mean, our families are trying to help them. But what now with everybody losing their jobs? We just got shut down here in Michigan. They're down in Georgia, ready to get shut down. All of my surrounding states, I'm worried because my husband may lose his job and so forth. So we're just we had everything in plan to help my grandchildren and his wife while he was a low offender, level 1. But the surrender, do you have any idea what's going to happen with the coronavirus with self-surrender? I mean, or is there any recourse that we can petition to help him and his family due to, you know, a higher financial, you know, I mean, they're going to be, I'm just afraid that we're not going to be able to help them. I mean, because of the amount.
Okay. You going to go first, Jose?
Yes. I mean, there is a couple of questions there. I'm going to try to answer in general the most of it. So the first thing is he surrendered. So he shouldn't be moving nowhere right now.
No,
the movement
he hasn't surrendered yet. He has a due date. He has a due date, but he hasn't heard from the BOP yet. He has a surrender date May 1st, but he hasn't heard from the BOP yet.
Well, the BOP will keep that surrender date. They could still surrender. Their inmates are surrendering every day. So, I mean, that surrender day doesn't impact anything unless the whole institution is quarantined, which then the Bureau will let them know, will let the U.S. Marshals and the courts know this institution is quarantined, no movement will come in, and then they'll change them somewhere else. That's the fact.
Okay.
But inmates are surrendering every day.
Okay. Are they putting them in quarantine or anything?
No, I mean, they're being isolated if they have symptoms, just like the general public.
Oh, okay.
Everybody.
Okay.
They'll perform screening for COVID-19 if the inmates show symptoms. If they have any symptoms. If they don't have any symptoms, they could be in general population. Because remember, in prison, it unfortunately is a good way to contain this disease. Because there is no movement. There's no isolation. And people that are being symptomatic will be immediately tested.
Okay.
So if he has a surrender, if he has a surrender letter that says he has to go to the U.S. Marshals, he'll have to go to the U.S. Marshals. If he has a surrender letter that specifies an institution, he's got to go to that institution. So
okay,
so we just wait for that letter.
We haven't received
the letter.
You won't receive anything right now. You will not receive anything right now because that day of May 1st is still a good surrender date.
Yeah, you'll get one in a couple of weeks. Yeah, probably in a couple of weeks you'll get a letter.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks. Okay, and then at that point he surrenders. Is there any advice that you could give us to kind of help him? I mean, I've been following, reading everything that you guys write, but I'm not sure.
What you need to do is text us at 214-431-2032. Give us a text, and we'll spend some time with you addressing your specific case.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Okay. Have a wonderful day. Stay safe, you guys.
Yes,
you're welcome.
Stay
you
safe.
Too. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, then. So, yeah. So, once again, you got to obey the law. You know, if you get that letter from the U.S. Marshals, you got to go in. But you know what happened recently, Jose, is on an incoming case, the defense attorney, as well as the assistant U.S. attorney, were able to argue with a judge in Oregon to, instead of a 5-year prison term, the person got like 5 years probation with 3 years direct home confinement in lieu of this COVID-19. So, you know, if you have an attorney that can make a motion to the judge for an alternative sentencing procedure in light of the COVID-19, that's what it's going to take. Or if you need some help with guidance or helping you think through the language that we can assist you with your attorney, then maybe give us a text at 214-431-2032. That sounds corny, but it is what it is.
Yeah, so in that case, it's interesting that you mentioned that case because that was a perfect candidate. The individual had pre-existing conditions, and so that's why the judge was inclined to do that. Because if not sending him to prison, he would be vulnerable, very vulnerable. If you have individuals that are symptomatic or individuals that have pre-existing conditions or maybe have some medical issues that can expose them, like with us in general population, outside in the free world, you know, give us a call. We have some strategies for those cases. Absolutely. That was a perfect case that where the judge took the alternative of sentencing to home confinement.
Yeah, so that's one aspect. But I think, you know, there's a lot of families out there that have their loved ones in a prison. The prison is on lockdown for one reason or another. They're not able to communicate with their loved one, and they're really worried about their loved one's health and safety. But like you said, Jose, I think, you know, in a prison, a prison's unlike a jail. Jails are very contagious environments because people are in and out. It's a high transient, high movement thing, and germs are coming into that jail all the time. Prisons, not so much. You know, like you said, whoever was there. And if Corona wasn't there, it wasn't there. So the only moving parts would have been visitors, staff, and possible, you know, vendors coming through the rear gate. But I even think, you know, depending on the joint, they probably have inmates take the stuff, you know what I'm saying? There's probably a no man's land at the rear gate, and they put the pallets into food service. So anyway, yeah, or the warehouse, at these warehouse. Or at the complex, the warehouse is outside the joint. And so all the stuff is in the food service warehouse or whatever, and then it comes in through cadre worker B types of dudes. So thus reducing the spread. So anyway, so let's look at some. Okay, so Jose has a good point. So if the person is at risk of becoming ill or is very ill, now what about like care level 2 and care level 3 inmates, Jose? Some of those folks might be candidates, or what are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Those are the cases that we're talking about, vulnerable individuals that have pre-existing conditions. Because remember, care level 1 is healthy individual. Care level 1 medical is a healthy individual. Care level 2 is individuals that have conditions like, high blood pressure, diabetes, need to follow up on things like that. So those are care level 2. Care level 3 are a little bit more chronic individuals who have illnesses that require constant review. I mean, someone that has liver problems, kidney problems, prostheses, more chronic care. Now, care level 4 is an individual that if they're in the free world, in general population, the community, they will be hospitalized. So care level 2, care level 3s, they are vulnerable individuals which might have pre-existing conditions that could impact they're being symptomatic to the COVID-19. So, but one of the things is, Bruce, that I wanted to mention real quick is to make it clear to the folks out there, the Bureau of Prisons continues admission of new inmates to federal custody. And we got to keep in mind that the courts are not closed yet. District courts are operating in a reduced schedule, but they're operating. So, I mean, the prison continue the business, and to assure that they manage their population, their staff that work in those prisons, the inmates that are in those prisons, the entire federal prison system, the BOP is moving inmates out to other places, but they are going through a COVID screening. It's not like there's not a COVID screening. It's going through COVID screening. So everybody that's going to be moving somewhere, because they have to manage their population, they continue operating. So, they just updated their plans, their movement plans. And in order to move an inmate, the inmate must have been in custody at least 14 days or greater than that in order to move an inmate from one place to another. Inmates releasing to the community, because inmates have to continue releasing. The Bureau of Prisons cannot hold an inmate past their release date, their statutory release date, because they will be illegal. So inmates releasing to the community, they go through an exit screening for COVID. If they are sick, they are told they have to quarantine, and the family will be advised, and probation will be advised, because they have to report to probation within 72 days. They got
72 hours. Release. 72 hours.
3 days. 72 hours. Sorry, Bruce. 72 hours within 3 days at max. So probation is being advised also. So, that's the thing. If an individual is symptomatic, and they have to be moved for whatever reason, they won't move. They will be isolated and in quarantine.
All right, so let's just talk about some hard, cold facts. So ordinarily, people would release, even if it was through the First Step Act. So I'm kind of looking through the lens of enhanced First Step Act, okay? So here we go. So they would have had to go typically from an institution earning the transfer credits to a residential reentry center. So now we have these residential reentry centers now that are going to be full as of next week or the week after, okay? So these places are going to be busting at the seams, these RRC halfway houses. What's the release valve? The BOP then goes to the residential reentry center manager and says, man, we need to push to get as many people on home confinement as possible. Usually they have these quotas that they have to maintain 10, 15, 20% home confinement. That's part of the BOP contract. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, these halfway houses aren't run by the Federal Bureau of Prisons like they used to be. They're private companies that are kind of They're contracts that are over. There's an oversight specialist, but these are private companies and not, sadly, and I'll go on, that's a rant that I'll go on another show. Okay, so that said, what places like Austin, Texas, Waco, Texas, man, those are smaller halfway houses. That Waco has like a 7 to 10 bed halfway house. Austin isn't that big either. So they got to push all these people out to home confinement. But what has to happen before that happens? Staff from the RRC have to go back and do another house inspection first before the person can go in home confinement. And I believe, well, no. See, federal probation had to have done a housing inspection first. So, but before they went to the RRC. So now, the RRC staff are double taxed because they're having to do home inspections. And the more people you have on home confinement, the more job checks and home checks you have to do. Well, this is a business for these people. They're hiring these people at $10, $15 an hour to do, I think, pretty complex correctional service management stuff, right? And so then the only other thing is that you got direct home confinement places like in Massachusetts that'll have a direct home confinement zone, right? That you can go from the institution directly into home confinement. But that's not the way it is nationwide. That's a particular BOP contract that's very fortunate for those people. We talked about that 2 weeks ago, Jose, that gentleman that we helped get out there. Remember that guy? He went straight to home confinement from the institution.
Correct.
But that's the exception and not the rule. So I think, folks, if you're listening, and for those of us that follow the First Step Act on Facebook, you understand the realities of the correctional management, how the heck these people get out. They just don't get out. They're just not free. Their sentence doesn't change. It's just they'll transfer to a different form of community custody.
Right.
Go ahead,
right,
Jose.
Right.
That's my box, man. What do you got? Yeah.
No, I think you're right on point, Bruce. I think now with this issue of this disease out there, I think they will apply that exception of home confinement a little bit more flexible. They'll have to expedite some more cases, the review of these cases, because it makes more sense to kind of isolate an individual in their house under electronic monitoring or home confinement versus in a halfway house where you might have 20, 30, 40, 50 individuals, you know, plus the staff going there. I think they will apply more flexibility to granting expanded home confinement or electronic monitoring under this act for individuals that are the minimum risk, first-time offenders, minimum risk, and that are vulnerable to this disease. So I'm certain that's going to happen. Actually, we're in contact with our folks waiting to hear what the Bureau of Prisons is going to do. I've just got a couple of texts from some of our clients, Bruce, asking what is going on. And I said, we're just pending to hear the guidance that the Bureau of Prisons is going to get from the Department of Justice and D.C. and from the president's office through the president, who is looking very closely at this issue. Just keep in mind one thing. The Bureau of Prisons cannot open the gates and let inmates out. They cannot do that. The courts are the ones that will determine, actually, the statutory release of an individual. The law is the law, and the Bureau, as a agency of the executive branch of government, has to apply that law. The judiciary establishes the sentence, and the Bureau makes sure that the individual complies with that sentence and completes it. These are exceptional times. This is an exceptional event that's happening. And unfortunately, they're not going to open the door to everybody because there are individuals that are high risk. So this is something that the Bureau of Prisons is just waiting to hear what guidance they're going to receive. I'm certain they're going to review some of the cases that deserve to be out on electronic monitoring or expanded home confinement or expanded release reentry center or halfway houses.
Good point. Now, you know, let's transition our discussion into who is high risk, and I'll go first. So make no mistake about it. People that are high risk are not going to be considered. People that have a public safety factor will more than likely, I would say, not be considered. People who have an established crime of violence or a history of violence will not be considered. People who have a public safety factor for sex offender will not be considered. Even though these persons are in low, right? You might have a possession, a child porn case, the guy's a non-contact sex offender, that it doesn't mean that he's not violent. He still has a public safety factor as a sex offender. People who were in security threat groups who were in a drop yard or drop yard alumni that might have worked their way down. Anyway, 2113 bank robbery. Okay, even if your loved one robbed a bank with a squirt gun, it's still threatening another individual. That is a crime of violence. That precludes them from a benefit. If you are not a United States citizen, you're precluded from this type of action because these decisions are made for citizens of the United States of America. And I know, I wish, you know, it just, that's just the way that it is. So, Jose, what are some other groupings of offenses that might or will not be eligible, won't be seen as nonviolent?
Well, I mean, you said it. I would put it this way. If the individual is in a minimum security facility, they are at minimum risk. If they're a low security facility, they're a low risk. If they're a medium security facility, they're a medium risk. If they're a high security facility, they're a high risk. So I would take it from there, and I would look maybe at some individuals going from the low security facilities being low risk might have something coming. With this situation being reviewed for possible early expanded RC, expanded home confinement, expanded electronic monitoring. Minimum security facilities, no doubt. Now, I wouldn't say that an individual who just got sentenced and has a release date of 2029, it's going to be, released from prison. I don't see that coming unless they get an executive clemency or a pardon or a commutation of sentence from the president or something like that. But I don't see those individuals released. I would see some individuals that have a year or so, those that are being considered, those that are approved already for halfway house or for home confinement, those that are being actually now pending approval or consideration. There's high risk, like you said, Bruce, the individuals with higher sentences, the individuals that possess those weapons that have prior criminal history, violence, even though it might not violence two or three priors, and are at medium security or at low security or even at minimum security with higher time to serve, a greater amount of time to serve. So those individuals absolutely won't be considered. Like you said, those individuals that have security threat group assignments or associated with gangs, the word public safety factor says it. It's a safety concern to the public if they have that PSF, what we call the public safety factor. Those individuals will be excluded. Certainly, individuals that, like I said, those individuals that are prone to be vulnerable because of pre-existing conditions might as well be the ones that are being looked at. I would say some of the aliens might get expedited review by Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
That'd be nice.
ICE. That'd be nice. And get to be reviewed faster so they could be, deported faster.
So, yeah, I agree. I like that, Jose. That would be a nice relief for the non-U.S. citizens that are out there in these in these other private prisons waiting deportation, or if they're at the ICE facilities, like in, was it North Lake or whatever the big one is in Michigan and others.
Right.
It would be nice for them to get expedited reviews, but I bet you those ICE people are saying, look, we're going as fast as we can with what we got, not to mention COVID-19, or they're trying to get their own COVID-19 cases out of their own institution. You know what I'm saying? You know, okay. But yeah, once again, that's a good thing. So I think that the term nonviolent is a big thing, because, you know, the Bureau of Prisons may see violence differently than somebody's mama, you know, who said, oh, my son's a good boy, and, you know, he had a domestic violence charge 10 years ago, but he's still nonviolent. Well, you know, if he has a history of violence, even if it was a Class A misdemeanor for domestic violence or whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think, do we have another caller coming in? Or if we do, go ahead and send them through. If I thought I saw a flash. But anyway. Okay, no calls. All right. My apology. Alrighty then. So yeah. So that's, but again, that's why people need to consult with us, because we have the operations memorandums and those, the classifications of what constitutes a crime of violence or not. So, but man, Jose, we've been getting a lot of questions with the 2D1.1 enhancement for firearms alongside other different types of conspiracies on 841 and 846. And then we've had a lot of 924 and 922 gun charge people. So, yeah.
841, 846, and 851, which is drugs and weapons. So, yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, 851. And recently had a BOP staff talk to me about the 960s, how 960s run. There's similar paragraphs with these 960s. So I got to do some research on that. I got put on blast last night by one of our venerable case management experts. So got to look at these 960s, even though we haven't had any clients call about those.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, that's good. You know, I think, but you know, what's one thing about COVID-19, like Justin was saying, it's kind of a societal reset, but it's also given people a chance to stay at home and pay attention and find us out there on Google or social media and do some research on these things and seek, if not help for their loved one, but some understanding of what's going on with, President Trump and his thoughts about providing some relief to the federal prison system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I know we've been, you know, last 2 days we've had probably over 100 calls, right? It seems like
it's been very busy.
And, you know, yeah, and we appreciate your calls. We appreciate everybody's call and interest, because even if you're not, if you don't have anything coming now, you may have something coming later, you know, or in a year or two. So it's good to talk to us and you know, and we'll guide you to the policies and everything. And again, let me just say, the First Step Act Federal Prison Reform Facebook page has very detailed all the detailed procedures about elderly release, compassionate release procedures, elderly reduction and sentence procedures, and those things. We've already offered those up on the site for our members to see for free, and to literally hear it from the horse's mouth and be able to synthesize that information. I know if you're kind of a layman and you're not used to all these words, I know it took me about 20 years to get used to it. So, I mean, it is its own language, and the Justice Department and the Bureau has its own way of seeing things. I'm glad that you and I can be translators, out there to help folks understand what's going on.
Right. And you know, The folks are desperate because they don't hear from their loved ones and things like that. Trust me, if somebody would be ill, very ill, they will be somebody will be contacting you from the Bureau of Prison, from the institutions. You got to keep in mind that each institution, it's like a little city. Each BOP facility, it's like a little city that copes with the issues. You know, they have the little hospital, the little store, the little, you know, even their little bank, if you will, where they go and check their balances for phone or for commissary account. You know, they have their own barber shop. They don't have their own restaurant, which is the dining hall, the only place they could eat, and their houses. So, you know, you got to keep in mind that if something happens there, the administration will determine how to proceed with the situation. And if somebody is seriously ill, they will notify the family. So keep that in mind.
Yes, we definitely want to keep that in mind. You know, something you were saying earlier, about clemency processes and those things, about how this might mirror a clemency process. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's similar to a clemency process where, you know, an exceptional review of a release method granted to the executive branch, to the president. Actually, only the president could exercise executive clemency. In this case, it mirrors it because it's an exceptional review for a release of an inmate. So it's similar to that, but in this case, the court will definitely be consulted. And the court will have a say, you know, more or less. You know, the prosecution will be contacted, and then probably U.S. probation will be contacted from the sentencing district and see what their thoughts are in regarding early release of an individual. The executive process, it mirrors this, but it's ultimately the president who decides executive clemency, the pardon or commutation of sentence, or the executive clemency.
Okay, yeah, sounds, yeah, that's pretty interesting to see how that'll unfold. So we'll just have to keep an eye on it. I know we have some calls into officials, you know, that we talk to regularly about this, and we're just excited to see what kind of changes are going to come down the pike. It's really an exciting time to see what's going to happen and how they make these decisions. So we're just having everybody stay tuned, and you know, the good thing about social media and these days is that once they come out with guidance, you know, we might hear about it first or the next day, but usually within 2 or 3 days, it's out there on social media on the release procedures. So yeah. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. So in the meantime, we'll be, you know, answering some calls and answering folks' questions about, you know, what's going on. And hopefully these institutions will stay safe. You know, I mean, this is, I worked in various institutions, and I know you did too. Maybe let's talk a few minutes about, you know, the good health service and the HSAs. And I know that, you know, they get some bad press, but I think our health services and the United States Public Health Service, the Commission Corps, the United States Public Health Service, it helps us in various institutions, does a fantastic job of health promotion and disease management. And so what are your comments on that?
I think that, you know, the inmate population, the Bureau of Prisons is safe. And, you know, families are concerned, obviously, because the unknown. But public health services and the institution health services departments are up and
just
up.
Leave that up.
They follow the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control guidelines, and the World Health Organization guidelines. So they are high in sanitation standards there. They try to keep everybody healthy. I mean, because remember, not only the inmates go there, the staff that work there they return to their families. They're not quarantined. So the staff environment, the staff try to keep a healthy environment for them and for the inmate population and everybody that, that it's in that institution. So public health.
Okay, hey, service, Jose, we got a call.
Okay.
Hello?
Go ahead, ma'am. Hi.
Yes, I was just calling to get your opinion on what about people that are in camps. My husband is in a camp.
Yes.
He's 70. He's he'll be in April. He will have served 2 years of a 50-month sentence, but he does have underlying conditions, and I didn't know if they would consider. Will they consider the more heavily populated areas before they consider camps? Or any thoughts?
Yeah, we talked about the inmates that are at camps. The camps are minimum security facilities. And if he has a pre-existing condition, he's elderly, to think that the thought is that they would be looking at those type of cases probably to see how they could be released. I would say depending on the amount of time he has remaining to serve also. So if he's at a camp, which is a minimum security facility, he's a minimum risk. With a yes. pre-existing condition, as you said. So those are the cases that would be subject to review for the determination if they should be released or not.
Yes. Do you think there's going to be a, are they going to be looking for people that have less than a certain amount of time to serve, maybe?
That's what probably one of the factors that should be considered. If I was the decision maker, absolutely. If I was recommending to the Department of Justice or to the director of the Bureau of Prisons or to the Attorney General, which many times they consulted us when I was the chief there, we would say the length of time, of course, it has an impact. Where to draw the line, it's difficult to say. I would say 24 months, 36 months, no greater than that. But that's me kind of putting out there factors that are not, you know, yet determined. I would hate to raise your hopes up, but certainly those are the type of cases that I would say are subject to be reviewed. Individuals like you mentioned, like your husband and your loved one there, who's at a minimum security
yes.
facility, is 70 years
yes.
old, has pre-existing conditions. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes. His official release date as of now is November of 2021. So hopefully he
yes.
might fall in the category then to be reviewed.
Yes. September, you said, the 2021?
November of 2021.
November of 2021. Okay. Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Those are the type of individuals that, you know, fall within, I would say, the parameters of being considered for review under this extreme situations. Yes.
Yes. And maybe this would be a question for Bruce also. Is there a way that we could get him straight home and not have to go to a halfway house?
I don't know if Bruce heard the question, but
what
I
city?
Would say,
what city and state are you? What city and state?
Oh, he is in. He's at Macquarie in Pine Knot, Kentucky.
No, ma'am. What does it say in the pre-sentence report where his release residence will be?
Franklin, Kentucky.
Yeah, he's going to probably have to go through a halfway house. There's no direct home confinement that I know about there.
There's oh, okay. There's no direct home confinement. Okay. Okay. Well, that's thank
there.
You. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much.
Well, thank you for calling
you
in,
ma'am.
Yes.
Take care. And, mm-hmm. and are you a member of our Facebook? Are you a member of our Facebook
oh,
page?
Oh, yes.
Federal
oh, yes.
Okay,
yes,
okay.
I'm following you every day. Yes, I am.
All right. Well, keep on there for the latest updates, ma'am. And thank you for calling.
I will. In. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All righty then. So, good. We had a couple calls. That's good. And, Yeah, Jose, I mean, that sounds like that gentleman may be a candidate for review.
I would say so, definitely, definitely.
So, again, that's why we encourage our clients to tell their loved ones to use the administrative remedy process, starting out with the cop-out and the appropriate BP form, just asking politely, for review and strong communications between your loved one and the inmate and the case manager and unit manager is always good. Having no incident reports is always good. Staying out of trouble is always good. And programming.
Right.
Hopefully that person will be able to get some relief. So, well, we got about a minute and a half before we got to go. Any closing thoughts from the venerable Jose Santana? You have any other bits of wisdom for our listeners?
No, I think that we need to stay tuned on what's going to happen here shortly, because the folks are looking at the local and the state authorities are releasing inmates. Just keep in mind that local and state authorities, the governor and the mayor, they promulgate their own laws, right, for their city, for the commissions, the commissioners in the cities, and the legislature in the state. And the governor has a lot of authority. In the Federal Bureau of Prisons, it's Congress, the authority, who promulgates the law. And then the executive executes the law. And the judicial branch of government is the one that imposes the sentences. So it's very much different in the federal system. It has to go literally through an act of Congress in order to change a law or change what a sentence is. The judiciary has to do that. So just keep that in mind. It's easier for the state and the local cities to kind of release individuals than it is in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, the federal prison system.
Great point, and it's a good point of clarification. World of difference between federal and state crime. World of difference. World of difference. Lots of hoops, lots of agencies, and it's just a world of difference. But we know the difference, and we can certainly help people. So, folks, yeah, don't hesitate. If you have a loved one in federal prison or going to have a loved one in federal prison yourself, you may be a defendant. Please don't hesitate to contact us at area code 214-431-2032. Also, come by our website at federalprisonauthority.com. And, of course, our ever so growing in popularity resource of the First Step Act Federal Prison Reform Facebook. So please come by those sites and get all the information that you need, and you can contact us. Jose, thanks for coming on the show today. You did a great job, as always. Just such a great resource for people, man. And I'm so glad to be friends and colleagues and comrades with you, man. I couldn't ask for a better person to do federal work with, you know what I mean? So just a real pleasure there. So, well, folks, that's another great show we had today on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Feel free to see the show and other shows on Apple Podcasts. They're archived on the LA Talk Radio website. We can be reached at The Concierge Coaches on Instagram, LinkedIn, Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Justin, how can folks reach you these days?
Nimmergood.com, or you can feel free to drop me a line at coaching@nimmergood.com as well.
Awesome. All righty then. So
we'll be back to regular.
You're welcome, man. Thanks. Thanks for being on the show, and stay safe. And folks, we'll see y'all here next week on LA Talk Radio, Concierge Coaches Show. Until then, have a blessed week. Stay safe from COVID-19 and be well, everybody. Take care.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.